Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. And this evening we'll talk about Africa's liberation movements and democracy. With us tonight is Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda. He joins us by phone from the capital, Kigali. Good evening, Dr. Kayumba.
Good evening, Douglas. How are you doing in D.C.?
I'm doing very well, fine, thank you. And how's Kigali?
Kigali is very fine. We had a warm day today.
That's very good. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is Suleiman Mugula. Suleiman is an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and your listeners.
And thank you for being on the show once again. As I said, tonight's topic is going to be liberation movements and democracy in Africa. Let's begin with the basics, and let's start in Kigali. First of all, is there a way you can use force to get power and then thereafter make sure there's democracy?
Theoretically, that is the objective. That is the objective. If you look at liberation movements across Africa, if you look at what happened in Angola, 1975, you look at what happened in Mozambique, you look at what happened in Zimbabwe, you see what happened in Ethiopia, you see what happened in Uganda. All these leaders who came to power using the gun have always promised democracy. But in practice, it has been very problematic.
Yes. Suleiman, what do you think? Is it possible to use force to then transition to democracy?
Actually, I think the best would be to divide these liberation movements into two groups. One group is a liberation movement which start as political organizations, and then we have got liberation movement, or we have got military pressure groups which grow into liberation movements. For liberation political organization, those are well established, like the ANC, SWAPO, ZANU-PF. Those are basically organizations which are formed based on the manifesto which they have, based on the organization and the needs within that particular country, and they have got well-cut programs or manifestos on which they get their support, and they stay in power depending on the political mobilization which they have. The other side, we have got groups which have claimed that they are liberation movements, when actually they are military pressure groups. Mm-hmm. These are pressure groups which are a result of the political, social, and economic weaknesses within a particular country. Those particular pressure groups take advantage of those weaknesses within the country, and they masquerade as a political groups. Actually, we can say they are military pressure groups which later on get political wings, whereas the other ones are political organizations which later on get military wings. So they are the latter group, which is a military pressure group, later on growing a political wing, will never be a democratic institution. It is a military organization. It stays military with no matter whether it masquerades and gets a political wing later on and starts to masquerade as politicians and they put on suits. They remain military people, and they have remained military people, and they will never be democratic until they are overthrown.
Christopher, I think that distinction, I think, is clear. There are those, that, especially those that began as independence movements. We're talking of ANC, as he says, CCM, KANU, and SWAPO, and FRELIMO, and all those. As opposed to those that start with the armed wing, like the NRA type, the RPF type. So, Christopher, what do you think?
I agree with the two distinctions. Liberation movement that have necessarily a military wing that took over power, and liberation movements that had an armed wing that won a war and took over power. However, On the idea that liberation movements that did not have a military wing that won a war and took over power, and those that had a military wing that won power, what is more democratic? I have a problem with that. We have to define what is democracy. If we are talking about holding elections and winning a majority vote. Whether it is in these liberation movements that did not have a military wing that won war and took over power, or those that had a military wing and won war, I have a problem with that, with the exception of ANC, especially that ANC, we have to bear in mind, came to power through a negotiated settlement with de Klerk and his party.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if we're talking about holding elections and people going to vote, and we call that elections, I would say yes. But democracy is more than an event where you hold elections. If, for example, you look at what has happened in Namibia, people could say, yes, it is a democracy. But we have never had power changing hands from SWAPO to another political organization. The same thing has happened in Zimbabwe, it has happened in Uganda, it has happened in Ethiopia. The exception to this, I would say, is ANC. And of course, as you know, if we talk about TAMU, that came to be known as Chama cha Mapinduzi in Tanzania, we have never had a transition of power from Chama cha Mapinduzi to another political party. If we talk about KANU, you know the struggles for independence that happened in Kenya and the ouster of KANU. It was a struggle that led them to overthrow. It was not in the nature of KANU, because they didn't have a military wing to win power. It was not in their nature that they allowed the democracy to take root. Democracy was a result of contestation, imprisonment, and so many people died as a result.
I see. So, in other words, the bottom line is once you start that route, it's difficult to transition to proper democracy. Is that what you're saying, Christopher?
Yes, I am saying that access to power in Africa, whether by liberation movements with a military wing or not, it has been a result of local contestation for access to power. I am not aware of any leader in Africa of any liberation movement, with the exception of Mandela, who has willingly given up power because they think they can go and rest and retire. What has been happening in most of these countries, from Kenya to Namibia to Zambia to Tanzania, it is that the movement that gets power, or the movement that got power at independence, did not initiate democratic transition and willingly hand over power without shedding blood.
I see. Suleiman, I think to his point there, is it a case of a flawed start that you can't correct later on, or is it people just have intentions when they are starting these movements and power corrupts them, and they say absolute power corrupts absolutely, then they turn later on?
In both scenarios, actually. I think the bottom line is that for the past 50 years, we have not, as a continent, had the luck to have patriotic leaders like the likes of Mandela. Because, as you are saying, power corrupts, and there is no doubt at the moment the continent is in a crisis, because it has become rare for a leader to give up power. The way you are putting it, the way doctors put it, even the liberation movements, which were of political orientation, not of military orientation, even them, after going to power, there has been power dominance. They have monopolized the power. But the difference is, while it is easy for them to leave power through mobilization of the opposition, the other group, which is basically military, cannot be removed in power. While it is possible even to have change within the political party, within itself, there is some minimal democracy within those liberation movements. The other side, where you have got military pressure groups which have developed into political organizations. There is no change at all. You are talking of military regimes which have only changed the mode of operation. Otherwise, they are still basically military. So the problem which we have on the continent, which you cannot run away, is that we have not had many of these liberation movements transiting into real democracy. They have continued to monopolize power. Chama cha Mapinduzi has continued. ZANU-PF has continued. SWAPO has continued. But also, that one is partly due to the fact that the opposition in these particular countries has failed to mobilize itself. They have failed to organize themselves due to a variety of reasons. So, but unlike in the military, total military regimes, like in Rwanda, like in Uganda, like in Ethiopia, there, the guns are still on the heads of people because these people grab the power with the guns and they still hold the guns. They are still retaining power using the guns. So there is no democracy which can go on when they still hold the very guns which they use to take power.
So, and Christopher, there's no way the gun, you can separate the gun from power. The gun is power itself.
Maybe I should say 5 points. Number one, democracy really has never been free. You know, that is, for me, that is the bottom line. Democracy has never been free, whereby, by nature, somebody who is holding power without any contestation, without any strong opposition, just merely handing over for the sake of handing over. Because, and that is my second point, the nature of power is such that the more you have power, the more you want to accumulate more power. That is the nature of power. And therefore, democracy has never been free. So what is the problem, the way I see it? The way I see it is, number one, our political culture. Our political culture is such that since independence, access to power has largely been a consequence of violence. And those who use violence think that probably society owes them something. I was reading somewhere in Uganda, Museveni saying, I think he was in Western Uganda, saying that he went to hunt his animal. And now getting home, the animal is ready for roasting and they are telling him to go home. So he thinks he hunted an animal. He wants to eat it until maybe death calls him. So I think society owns him something. Number two is the nature of our society. The nature of our society, as you know, is largely still peasantry. Our majority of our people are still they are still suffering for what I would call basic needs. They are still looking for bread and butter issues. They are still looking for shelter. They are not empowered enough to contest, to know the power they have and how they can use it. And finally, those who gained power, whether independence or what is normally called the third wave of democratization in the 90s, they never built institutions. So instead, we have the cult of individuals. In most of these countries, individual leaders are more powerful than institutions. That's why even we have weak parliaments, we have weak legislatures, we have weak electoral commissions. So to have a weak society, a less empowered society, that is still looking for bread and butter stuff, the elite that are still looking for school fees to pay for their children, and then you have weak institutions, and then we have a culture, a political culture based on inheritance, because we of these leaders, while they claim to be democratic, at heart, they are still suffering from a peasantry culture that is connected to our traditional forms of governance. For example, in Uganda, in most of Uganda, we had kingdoms. In Rwanda, we had kingdoms. In most of Africa, we had kingdoms or chieftaincies. So, while theoretically and talking, these leaders claim to be democratic, at heart, by upbringing, by belief, I still think as our monarchs used to think.
I see. On that point, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of Africa's liberation movements and democracy.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. North to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.
Welcome back. In case you're tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is Africa's liberation movements and democracy. Our panelists are Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda. He's joining us from Kigali. And Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, and he's joining us from Durban. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Suleiman, before that short break, Christopher raised many issues there, most of which was that most of Africa still consists of less empowered societies and weak institutions. And looking across the continent, most of the leaders who lead some of these movements actually have worked tirelessly to make their societies less empowered and have weakened or destroyed institutions there. So what's the hope now?
Actually, the bottom line is that the continent, by and large, most of the countries, they are fragile. Anytime you get explosions, the way you saw in Libya, the way you saw in Central African Republic, the way you saw the attempts in Chad, Yaya Jammeh, Egypt, and then lately in Burkina Faso. Many of these countries, they have not, the leaders or the so-called liberators, they have not been able to establish a sustainable political, social, and economic system. The way the doctor has said, most of the institutions are very weak. As a result, the countries are rotting silently. As a result, there is poverty. As a result, as you can see, the burden of unemployment is increasing every day on the continent. Apart from South Africa, where we can manage it, in other countries, it's becoming unmanageable. In many of these countries where you have got a dictatorship, the unemployment levels are going from between 70 to 100%. So the level of poverty, the way a doctor has said, most of our people are still peasants. They are still in the rural areas. They have migrated in town. They are living a miserable life. There is no energy. The countries are just going backward. So in short, even the so-called liberation is still a point to discuss whether actually people have been liberated. Instead, they are being oppressed more. There is more suffering. The social service section has collapsed. Schools are a problem. Health service is a problem. Energy is a problem. So we are going nowhere so long as there is no sustainable political, social system and economic system which has been established. Uh-huh. In other words, the continent is in a crisis as we speak.
I see. Christopher, then there are those who say, what accounts for the differences in countries? You talk of a country like, say, Zimbabwe, where ZANU-PF has been in power and the 90-something president doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Across the border there in Zambia, things seem to be going slightly better. You look at Kenya, KANU sort of fell up by the wayside. CCM is growing strong. You go to West Africa, Ghana is trying to move towards democracy. Some other neighboring countries are faltering. So, and these are almost same people. What accounts for one country going the other way and another at least making an attempt at good governance?
I could easily identify. Number one is concentration of power. and how the regime works to maintain and reproduce power. If, for example, you look at how the opposition in Kenya managed to wrestle power from Moi, you will find that most of the opposition guys who took power from Moi, including former President Kibaki, they were formerly in KANU. And even now, then you find that there is no concentration of power in the hands of only those in government. And therefore, you, by concentration of power, I mean political power, military power, and economic power. And therefore, you will find that some of the members of the, and this also happened in Zambia, it also happened in Ghana. So you find that some members, some politicians, the opposition, and those in government have a vested interest in the economic system because some of them even have shares in some companies. For example, in Kenya, you can find that, for example, President Uhuru Kenyatta now has shares in companies that Raila Odinga has. So, because historically their fathers were in the same political party, and they fell out at one point or the other, and therefore they managed to forge a way forward based on interests they have within the social structure. This cannot be said of Zimbabwe, because Zimbabwe since 1980, ZANU-PF has monopolized power, whether military, economic, and political. Number two, it is to do with investment in civil society. If you look at civil society in Zimbabwe, you look at civil society in Burundi, you look at civil society in Kenya, civil society is very strong. Civil society is empowered. While the civil society in Zimbabwe is extremely weak, also because of the policies. Because of the policies of government. And finally, like I said, I would talk about the role of the intellectuals, the role of the media, and ability to invest where your heart is. I have a feeling that in some countries, the intellectuals, even the media, do not invest their money where their hearts are. And that is in ensuring the democratic transition. Because if you look at, for example, the role that Nation Media Group played in Kenya, and you will also remember that Nation Media Group is owned by Aga Khan, it has been extremely important in making sure that the government, the KANU government, is held to account. If you look at the role the media is now playing in Burundi with the opposition, politicians, even civil society, are willing to go to prison to ensure that their president does not get a third term. Why?
Yeah, I see.
Because they are ready to take they are ready to take the price that democracy demands. While in some contexts, some politicians, the elite, are not willing to take this kind of risk.
I see. Suleiman, further to Christopher's point there. The intellectuals, the elite in some of these countries, and the media have sort of been co-opted. Like in some countries, you mentioned, Chris mentioned the Nation Media Nation Group. In some countries where it operates in East Africa, they are given terms and conditions, transfer this editor, fire that one, and they play ball with the regimes in power. So, and it, professors are and doctors are in government, and well knowing that they are not doing the right thing until they are fired. So, I don't know. What do you say, Suleiman?
Exactly. You are leading us now to the question of corruption. The elites have sold in. We have got an elite now who is so greedy, who is more concerned about his life than the life of the nation. That is one of the problems which we are having. Until when the elite become the vehicles of change, until when they emulate the elites in South Africa who became an alternative force, who went on the forefront to lead the other the other groups, we will not have change in Africa. The way you have said, many of them now are part and parcel of the regime. As a result, we are having a one-way system whereby it is just exploitation, it's just greed, it's just corruption. People, the political systems are just, the leadership is just enriching itself at the expense of the ordinary man. The, our elites don't even care whether there are no drugs in the hospital, so long as they have got their share of the pie. That is where we are having the problem in Africa. Secondly, we shall not have any development on the continent until when the leadership in Africa, especially in those countries where we have got a dictatorship, unlike those where my colleague has already mentioned, those which are on the positive march, those which are on the negative march, unless there is a change in mindset that the strongest weapon which we have are our human resource, and that we have to harness that human resource, and that we have to have national cohesion. We have to have everybody's participation in the affairs of developing a nation. If we continue believing that a small group can be able to monopolize the riches and wealth of a country and then push the country forward, that is cheating ourselves. In the long run, the countries are going to explode the way Central African Republic exploded, the way Southern Sudan has exploded. However much they will accumulate, it will be blown into ashes sooner or later.
Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Dr. Christopher Kayumba of the School of Journalism at the National University of Rwanda, and Suleiman Mugura, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And if you missed any part of this program, just go to our main website at www.vonews.com and click on Programs, scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you can listen to it again. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me. I'm Heather Maxwell for Music Time in Africa. Every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.